Good evening. Would you all please have a seat? And we are, this is the...
Mic's not on.
What's the date? Mic's not on. October 13th meeting of the Expanded Budget Committee. I noticed we have a lot more people here observing the meeting this evening than we've ever had at an Expanded Budget Committee, and I am guessing from the number of blue cards I have here in front of the room that people are here to talk about the Office of Human Rights and also the articles in the newspaper. Let me tell you what normally goes on here. We have an expanded budget committee. We do not have a public portion of any expanded budget committee meeting. That is done either prior to the voting meetings, these are called voting meetings, or during a public hearing that will be held later, or during the budget, or on a Tuesday night ledge meeting. I have consulted with some of my friends on the and people on the legislature and decided, made a determination that given as many people as we thought or I thought were going to be here, that we would do a public portion of an expanded budget committee meeting, which is generally not done. But since we're doing that, I want to acquaint you with the rules that we have for a normal county legislature meeting on Tuesday. When you signed your blue sheet and gave it to us, you were agreeing to a three-minute time limit, and you're agreeing not to raise your voice. You're agreeing not to use lewd, obscene, profane, slanderous, libelous language or speak or act in a manner that would tend to incite a breach of peace. And I agree to not speak about county personnel matters including comments about the job performance of a named county employee other than elected officials, that's us. After 3 minutes, I agree to leave the microphone and yield the floor to the next person. Transferring time to another person is not permitted, and I agree if I cause a disruption and am asked to leave, I will leave the chambers. We are going to have our screen operating at 3 minutes, and if there isn't anything else, I'm going to begin this public portion of the Expanded Budget Committee, and I have Laura Branca, who would, if you use these two microphones at the back end of the ledge desk, that would work great. And Dan is passing out things that are going to be there, and we will adjust the microphones if you need that done.
Jim, maybe you could tell the next person in line so that they could be ready.
Yeah, we'll do that, Will.
Okay.
Laura, before you begin, Leon Lawrence will be in second place, and then Liz Brundage. And there are two names here. We're doing one at a time. But go ahead, Laura.
I don't think the mic's on.
Flick it on.
I wish to state for the record that having the Tompkins County Office of Human Rights be adequately funded and authorized to carry out local enforcement based on broader protections against discrimination and human rights violations is a critical need for our communities. We all know of people who have been denied housing or told to move their families from their residence, not based on whether they can pay their rent, but based on their source of income. We know that when county government proposes eliminating the Office of Human Rights, it must reflect that some of our legislatures have no knowledge of the importance of the Office of Human Rights and the Human Rights Commission to our people, and we want to stress the need for a public discussion about our perspectives and our needs before moving to cut OHR from the budget. It's a big miscalculation to assume that our communities, especially those whose human rights are most frequently in jeopardy, do not care about whether the OHR or the Human Rights Commission will continue and indeed be strengthened. Unfortunately, discrimination is not just a part of our county's historical past. It still persists today in housing and employment on the basis of race, class, source of income, having a prior conviction, etc. And we very much need to have the Office of Human Rights empowered to investigate complaints and enforce human rights law. Now more than ever, our county should be strengthening these services, not cutting them. As taxpayers, we want our public funds used to protect the human rights of all our people. New York State has enacted powerful and inspiring human rights law that we can all be proud of. Since the county has allowed the MOU with the New York State Division of Human Rights to lapse several years ago, the county's office has been significantly limited in its ability to enforce the full protections of human rights law. We encourage Tompkins County to pursue a renewed MOU with New York State. We support the expansion of local law to broaden OHR's enforcement powers. We support the elimination of source of income as an eligibility requirement for rentals, and we support banning the felony box on applications, among other discriminatory barriers to employment and housing. Thankfully, Tompkins County has made a substantial investment in reentry services to assist people returning to our communities upon release from jail and to reduce recidivism and county jail overcrowding. Finding decent, stable, affordable housing is essential to successful reentry. Since the county's put so much money towards these worthy goals, it is in all of our interests to recognize the effect of housing discrimination on recidivism. The Office of Human Rights can be a key partner in achieving these goals if it is fully funded and is empowered to fully enforce the breadth of New York State human rights law. And this is signed by the people in the letter.
Great job.
Thank you.
Leon Lawrence, please, followed by, I have two names on one paper, Liz Brundage, Sharon Hickey. So, Leon?
For those of you who are not aware, my name is Leon Lawrence. I'm a former member of the commission and a former chair of the commission. What I want to do is I want to yield my time to Mike Ziegler for him to tell us why it was crucial for him to remove the, to make an amendment to close the OHR. So that's what I want to do.
Leon, that's an interesting request. Mike, you're shaking your head?
No. We normally don't do that.
No.
We don't respond.
We've already changed the rules here, and this is not going to be a back and forth. Okay, so, Leon.
Then I have another question.
Well, hold on. Let me. I have a name on the sheet, and it looked like it was printed by you, Leon Lawrence, and you said to us that, did I make a mistake? If I did, I'm sorry, but it's here.
Oh, no, that's me.
Okay,
I'm confused with what you're saying.
But go ahead. Ask the question.
So my question is, are you going to bring that amendment up again?
As I said, we're not doing it back and forth. Okay? All right.
Final thought.
Okay, let me just say one thing. That amendment is not on the agenda. It was pulled back by Legislator Ziegler. So, I really want this to be understood. We are not doing a back and forth. All right?
Okay, just one last point for clarification.
Okay.
Will the amendment be going into the final budget vote?
I don't think anybody can answer that now.
Okay. All right.
What?
Maybe we could tell more about what the process is and the various points at which people could make such resolutions.
Excuse me. Tell me what your question was again.
Is the amendment going to be put back in the final vote?
All right. I explained at the beginning, we are now in voting meetings. We have one more voting meeting scheduled. We have a public hearing scheduled. We have a tentative budget vote scheduled, and we have a final budget vote in November. At any time during that process, any legislator can bring back any amendment, even at the last moment. We're voting on the budget in November. So I'm not going to guess, and I'm certainly not going to speak for my colleagues here by saying if that amendment is going to reappear in the 2017 budget.
Okay.
Process.
Thank you very much. Okay. I will be back, and we will be back.
Okay. Liz Brundage, Sharon Hickey. It's a duo?
We'll save it.
Oh, okay. Go ahead. I think we have both microphones working. If anybody is on this side, they can use that. But go ahead.
Hi. So thanks so much for the time. My name is Liz Brundage, and this is Sharon Hickey. We both work and teach at Cornell Law School. And we've had the great privilege over the last year and a half to work with the Office of Human Rights on an initiative, along with other community partners, to try to help implement the resolution that the Tompkins County Legislature adopted in November 2014, recognizing freedom from domestic violence as a human right. The Office of Human Rights has been incredible. They've been just the ideal partner. They've inspired us. They've inspired our students. Their hard work, their dedication, their commitment to the issue of domestic violence, to human and civil rights, has just been so important and has really made us proud to be a part of this community. And it's for that reason that we strongly support not only the continued support of the Office of Human Rights, but also its strengthening so that it can continue and to grow and do its important work on behalf of the civil and human rights of all residents of Tompkins County.
Hi, I'd just like to briefly add to what Liz said. My name is Sharon Hickey, as Liz told you all, and I also work in Cornell Law School. I'd like to add our support to the strengthening of the Office of Human Rights, including pursuing that MOU with the New York State Division of Human Rights, because this really would be such an incredible asset for people in the community. The process of people vindicating their human rights is very time-consuming. It's very confusing, and it can be very costly. And so if the Office of Human Rights were able to have that investigative or enforcement powers, it would mean that our citizens and our residents would not need to go to the nearest state enforcement agency, which is actually in Binghamton, and they would be able to be supported by Karen and those in the Office of Human Rights in vindicating their human rights. And we really think that this would be an incredible asset for our community. We hope that you will consider working on that memorandum of understanding with the New York State Division of Human Rights.
Thank you very much. Jim Weaver, and followed by Jamila, a member of the Human Rights Commission.
Hi, I'm a member, Jim Weaver. I'm a member of what's left of the Tenant Association at Ellis Hollow Road Senior Apartments. We've encountered a lot of struggles with the district manager for Conifer and also the property manager there of allowing tenants to form an organization and to see that their rights are preserved. We went around to a lot of different places in Ithaca to get help, and there were three places that did help us. One of those was the Ithaca Times, another was Barbara Lifton's office, and then the third one was the Office of Human Rights. Xavier Rusk has been very helpful in educating us into what the laws are. Peter Stein was there when we got to a point where we called Mike Danaher from the Attorney General's office out of Binghamton to come and let people know what the rights are. We want the Office of Human Rights to come to our complex and tell the residents what their rights are, and that way they'll hear it firsthand and not the version that the district manager of Conifer or the property manager gives their version. I would ask that you help the funding for the Office of Human Rights as what they've been doing for us is they're helping disabled, elderly, low-income people. And that's what that building was when it was remodeled in 2005 by Conifer. That's what they promised to provide a decent housing for that group of people. And they get right around $342,000 a year in tax credits for that property. The one up in Poets Landing, they get just over $1 million. I don't know if those are federal tax credits or state tax credits, but there's a lot of money there that they're getting, and we need help holding them to what they signed on to when they agreed to look after this group of people. Thank you.
Thank you. Jamila, followed by Tracy Salt.
Good evening. My name is Jamila Walida Simon. I serve as the current chair of the Tompkins County Human Rights Commission, and I thank you for your time today. But it's unfortunate, instead of accolades for being the most diverse county office, the Office of Human Rights is being targeted. OHR is a vibrant office staffed by three wonderful people who are dedicated and work hard in spite of not having enforcement powers, something that was inherited by Director Baer. Are there legislators looking into assisting the OHR staff? Has anyone looked into how effective this office has been? What other projects and activities they've worked on in addition to talks about reinstating their enforcement powers? In the 199th year of the existence of the Tompkins County Legislature, we should be applauding offices that are underfunded and understaffed and remain diverse, or we set the bar really low for everyone. Our county remains unwelcoming, and more often than not, especially to diverse populations. I stand with the Office of Human Rights and its staff, and also with the Tompkins County Human Rights Commission, who serve as a haven for residents, to eliminate and prevent discrimination based on employment, housing, education, based on race, age, creed, color, sex, sexual orientation, gender identity, national origin, marital status, disability, military status, arrest record, conviction record, predisposing genetic traits, and familial status, exclusively in housing. The Office of Human Rights continues to file complaints, and they work with state and federal agencies. The Human Rights Office also does outreach, which remains firmly centered and growing in workshops, programs, and trainings. As a member of the Commission of the Tompkins County Human Rights Commission, I feel that it's shameful that we have to be here begging for an office to remain open. It's very sad that we're at this particular place, and it means that we have to grow in our understanding of what this county is all about.
Tracy Salt, followed by Anna Ortiz.
Good evening. My name is Tracy Sue, and I just finished my first year as a commissioner. And then Human Rights Commission. I joined because I came down with an invisible disability in 2013. The agencies in town that serve people with disabilities do so and simply raising awareness. If they don't have the resources to offer legal assistance, we have a paralegal on staff. I have come across wall after wall in finding a job and talking with people in the community. I've found that they also have come across the same issues. We're discriminated against simply because we communicate differently or process information differently. We are strong, independent people who want to be a productive member. And the only way we can do that is with HR's help.
Thank you. Anna Ortiz, followed by Joyce Muchin.
Good evening. My name is Anna Ortiz. I'm one of the commissioners for the human rights. I'm here because I don't have too much introduce. We're trying to do Latino Center in Ithaca, and I'm here because most of the percent of the people, they advocate through the Office of the Human Rights is very important to us because the Office of the Human Rights, they have a Spanish speaker, and we need it very, it's very important to us. And I personally volunteer for 8 years for the Human Rights, and not only the Human Rights, helping with the state laws and the complaint and all stuff, but they're doing some amazing stuff with the MAK, the arts for the children, and that's one of the important things in Ithaca that I think, because I'm a community member, and like me and people in the community, they need help to support the youth and the kids to do more art and poetry, like stuff with the MLK event. And I believe if, like my another colleague, Jamela, say, you know what I mean, it's kind of hard and it's killing our heart that we had people that had to begging for money, you know, most, it's not about, the important part of the human right is they support, they advocate for domestic violence, they support the Latino of in Ithaca. It's, they supported a lot of housing and you know, the local law, and it's very important to the local community like myself, because I have one of the problem with when I live in Meadow Street and I was with my four children and I would have no way to go. And I went to the Office of the Human Rights, and they just give you your heart. They're not even come. They just, if you come to them and you tell the situation, they're trying, they're doing by state of the law, the local law. And I believe the local law need to be happening in Ithaca, because person like me, they have some situation in their hometown, and we can't even do nothing. We had to go somewhere else in Binghamton or Maida. So why that we had to go driving around? And like before that, I have a situation with my car. I have my kids with medical problems, so I had to driving around because and then I get help. So I think you should consider about your budget for the human rights. Thank you.
Thank you, Anna. Josh Muchin, followed by Marsha Baum.
Hi, I'm Joyce Muchin. I'm a former commissioner for 15 years. I was a commissioner during, some of you probably won't even recognize her name, Teddy Zimrot, Lauren Austin, Sean Martel Moore. I'm a former chair. I was chair also during the Kearney case, the barbershop case. If you don't know what that is, you should look it up, and local law C. All during my tenure in the commission, I can tell you that especially the directors of Women of Color were discriminated against as directors by this county board on a continuous basis. And Mike, this isn't the first time that you have put forth, and it won't be the last, the closure of the Office of Human Rights. And with institutional knowledge comes knowledge of discrimination that's taken place in this county. And the work that the commission has had to do over the years to stay open against the words of the legislature takes away from the discrimination and the work that needs to happen in the community. So every moment that you're voting against the commission, it's a vote for racism and for discrimination in the community. Also, I was a commissioner when we had the MOU. And when the legislatures did not back that continued MOU, that sent another message to the community about the discrimination that you were going to allow. Also, since I'm not under any disclosure gag order right now, there was many legislators who were landlords who had discrimination, and any time as commissioners that we were addressing rental housing issues or discrimination in the businesses they owned, there was a backlash continuously against the commission that we shouldn't be investigating this. So that's historic, and that's the truth. And I'm ashamed to again be here, to be standing up fighting for the rights of the community, because you're allowing, again, for you to come forward again with this is a disgrace, and you should be ashamed.
Marcia and Amos Malone will be following Marcia.
Sometimes out of controversy comes success. And so here we are, at least able to have a discussion to bring to light what may have, maybe not here, but maybe passed through without a conversation. And I think as you look around, I hope that you see that we are members of the community who in fact do care very much about the Tompkins County Office of Human Rights. And I in fact agree with Mr. Siegler's what he said, his quote, it said that a dramatic change is needed in the Office of Human Rights. I agree with that. But what I think the dramatic change that is needed is for the Tompkins County Administration and the Board of Representatives to support our community neighbors, our friends, our coworkers, and our relatives who have, unfortunately, and they continue to, experience discrimination and who, in fact, do need the Office of Human Rights. I think the change is for you all to support the Office of Human Rights by taking specific and vigorous action to get the MOU reinstated, to get that memorandum of understanding reinstated with the state. We need to expand the offerings, not lessen them, and certainly the office should not be dismantled. Sadly, given the rise of hate speech and hateful actions, it's hard to imagine how the work of the office won't be needed. One of the many ways the office improves the quality of life for community members is through its educational programs. They're excellent opportunities for us to model for our children specifically, but for all, cooperation and collaboration, inclusiveness, civic responsibility, and respect. One of the programs is a poster contest on the theme, What Would Martin Luther King Say Today? About this discussion, as I thought about this, I think the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. would say, don't dismantle the office, but build it up. Yes, reexamine the mission and expand it so it can be truly effective in helping those whose civil and human rights may have been violated. I believe Dr. King would say, don't use the Office of Human Rights as a means to balance the county budget. Instead, use the office to build up and balance the lives of people who are in need. What a good thing if our Office of Human Rights could be a well-sought-out model for others about how to effectively and efficiently defend the civil and human rights of all. I thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you, Marcia. Amos Malone.
Good evening. My name is Amos Malone. I am the current treasurer of the Toms County Human Rights Commission. I usually didn't want to, wouldn't say anything, but after seeing this, it bothered me. It bothered me because for anyone to feel like during this time of political season and turmoil that the world is in, to say we're going to take away, it's really not even about just color. It's all of the other things that go along with the Office of Human Rights. I believe a few years ago when you all hired Mrs. Bear, you wanted a champion. Now you got a champion, so much so I was reading the comments, things aren't being done, we don't know what they represent or whatever. Just a little bit about her character. We were trying to get together something for to help feed the homeless. The treasurer's not huge, just like her budget. She went into her pocket and said, make sure you all get what you need. That's just one instance where she has done things of that nature. But also, for the commission, she has been there to help guide us, Xavier, Sarah when she was there. And, you know, it's just unfortunate, as so many people have echoed in this room, that we are here even having this discussion in 2016. It lets us know how far we really have to go. Under the umbrella that has been going on, people feel free to just, the doors are open, and I'm glad you stepped out the closet, so now we know who you are. You really have to stop. This has to stop. It's not even about color. And as an administrator, you, the conversation we had, you said you wanted to be friendly for people to feel, you know, welcomed here. This is not a welcoming thing. This is something, we, like Marcia said, this should be a model. Ithaca is so diverse. Tompkins County is so diverse. This should be a model on how things should be in other counties. When we do a good job, it makes her look good. She's done an excellent job, it makes you look good. Whether you want to accept it or not, it doesn't matter. But the thing of it is, this has to stop. She needs extra money in her budget to do what? To do bigger and better things. You know, and to cut the budget or to get rid of the office, you're telling people, you know, it's okay. You don't matter. No life matters except whatever you're doing in here. And if it was up to me, if there's a change and a dismantling needs to take place, it would be right here. It would be right here because this cannot go on. This cannot go on. Whoever's in charge, somebody needs to go into executive session and the hammer needs to come down because this shouldn't even hit the paper like this. It does no service for the county or the community. It's a divisive and it's a wedge that is being drawn, not in Lansing, just in Lansing, but here in Tompkins County as a whole. This cannot happen. Injustice to one is injustice to all. And we will not stand for it. And we will stay open.
Anyone else? Wait. I have no other blue cards. Anyone else wishing to take their three at the mic? We will then thank you all for coming.
I would like three. I mean, I'll take it as a private citizen if I have to. That's fine.
Yeah, Mike.
Talking on the rules now, so.
It's up to you. Go ahead.
Not allowed.
Mr.
Chair.
Yeah. You have 3 minutes.
I know. I'm aware. So I want to thank you all for coming, first off. And I usually, they don't really let me talk to you, so I'll talk kind of this way.
I look at this department. You all are in here saying that I don't look at this as important. And that is not what I'm saying. But what I'm saying is human rights is important for the whole government, not just for this department. And you seem to think that we don't think about that every day. And for right now, and I'm sorry, yes, I did move to do this years ago. You know why? Because it's a department without a mission. It does not have a mission. Every single one of these people said, you know, we've got to go after this MOU. We've got to go after that. We've been doing it for a decade. Literally a decade we've been trying to get that back. And we're all happy. We keep spending the $300,000 to keep this department open. And yet we can't function the way that this thing is supposed to function. And yet we seem to be happy with that. You know, I've heard a lot, too, about, you know, this time of turmoil. And there are some that argue, because of the president that we have, that there's more turmoil. I don't agree with that. I personally think that you maybe have some turmoil because we're finally talking about this stuff that we haven't talked about. And the last gentleman, I'm sorry, yes, I take issue with you. I take issue with you because you're saying, we're going to shut this down. We're going to shut this conversation down. And I'm tired of shutting the conversation down. You got an issue, come talk to me about it. And I'm sorry, that should be the job of the entire government, not just some division that we have or some department that we have. And I'm sorry, the department that we have cannot function the way it's been functioning. If we can't get that MOU back, we have a real problem. And it would be my suggestion that, yes, did we cut the money from it? Sure. But it wasn't like I didn't say to the other county legislatures, hey, we could redesign this money. We could put this money. We need to hire somebody in Albany, maybe, a lobbyist, to go in Albany and say, how does Tompkins County get this back? There's got to be a way to do that. Because, frankly, for the last 10 years, we've been floundering with it. And I don't think just saying, hey, we could throw more money at this and that's going to solve the problem is going to actually solve the problem. So you're asking me why I brought this up? That's why. It's a discussion that needs to be had. If we're not going to have the discussion, then everything is going to stay the same. And frankly, I don't think anybody in the room is really happy with that. I think we're past that point of staying the same. But if you want the status quo, then that's what we're going to get. We're just going to keep muddling along. We're going to keep having these issues. And just frankly, that's where we're going to be. And I'm not satisfied with that. I want more than that. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mike. And we are going to begin the expanded budget committee.
May I have 1 minute? I'll give you a blue card. I just have to make sure that the people in the room know that for a person who wants to have discussions, I was never contacted prior to this amendment. Nobody has come to me to ask me what the mission of this office is. No one asked me, you know, or told me that they had issues with our office. I would have really liked that discussion to have taken place, you know, instead of finding an email at midnight saying that someone was trying to cut my whole staff. And I'm for discussions too. And I'm glad to have discussions. I don't think those discussions are taking place. I think you're correct. But I think the first discussion you should have had was to ask us what we do and who we are and what our mission is.
Carol, we are not the legislature. Mike made a statement. Karen made hers. We're back to the expanded budget committee at this point. No.
As a resident?
I'm sorry?
Can I speak at the mic?
I'm sorry.
I'm going to do it just because most of it was focused toward me.
Mike.
Well, thank people for coming.
Yeah, of course. Thank you all for coming. Joyce, I changed the rules to have this. We do not have public comment at expanded budget committee meeting. We do not. And I changed the rules. Everyone got their 3 minutes plus. Yes, I see the sign. They're wonderful. Would you leave one? I hope you have my name spelled correctly. We are doing the expanded budget committee. And here we go.
I'm legal, but I would just ask that
I have not silenced anyone, Joyce. Screens will come down. First time on the agenda is legislators Carol Chalk, Dave McKenna, Anna Kellis, Cornell Cooperative Extension, salary adjustments for four positions. When the screens get down and we turn it on, decide which one of you is going to move this.
Can we take a few minutes? I'm having a hard time thinking about launching into something unrelated.
No, Carol. As a matter of fact, I changed the rules. We did not have to do this. I made the determination we would listen, and I think we did the right thing. But, you know, I'm not going to... You know, we're not going to go back and forth about it now. It is not on the agenda. Unless maybe you want to put it on the agenda.
Yeah, I might ask Kevin to put it somewhere in here. A token $1 increase for the Office of Human Rights, so we have some vote for people to see that we're not, where the votes stand in any intention to shut this office.
I would hope you don't do that. Okay. Kevin? We have our first item. It is Chalk, McKenna, Kellis, CCE. Who's going to move it?
Want me to move it?
McKenna moves it or second. Anna seconds. Go ahead.
Me?
Go ahead.
Okay. Thanks. I put this on here. After a bunch of conversation with Ken Schlaughter about exactly what this is a salary adjustment for four positions to retain the tax-exempt status for the parts of his office in cooperative extension. The exempt status under the... I really don't know if I can do this. Anna, Dave, are you? I would point people first to the blue, to the yellow sheet in your cooperative extension folder that we got last session about the number of items and people that cooperative extension manages to serve with the amount that we give them as a total. Why don't I ask Ken to come up and talk about this a little bit? Can we start that way?
If you have a question for him, is he here? Yeah. Okay.
Exactly what this is, whether any of these positions are covered in your budget, whether our county program is already addressing this program, and... why it is that these positions should be moved to a managerial status.
Okay. So thanks for the opportunity and thanks for putting this on the agenda. This is coming through? Okay. Yeah. These are four positions that are currently exempt. FLSA, the Fair Labor Standards Act, is basically going to increase the minimum salary that people must receive in order to maintain exempt status from somewhere around $26,000 to $47,000. And there are four positions in the organization. Well, we have about 35 positions that are going to be moved from exempt to non-exempt, of which there are four that are critical that have a tremendous amount of flexibility in their time, in the way that time is actually used. So there's a lot of evening and night and overnight sessions that they do, and the request was for this amount of money to be combined with other money that we have from grants and contracts to bring those four positions up over the $47,400 threshold, and thereby keeping these four people as exempt. It means they wouldn't have to keep time cards, which because they work at times, they'll meet somebody in a parking lot somewhere, and they might spend 15 minutes or 10 minutes talking to somebody who's associated with that. They would actually be legally required. We would require them to have to keep that time noted. So they'll end up spending an hour, 2 hours a week just keeping track of their time, and they would be paid for that time as well. Whereas if we kept them exempt, they wouldn't be keeping track of their time in that way, and they would basically be able to work when needed.
Hannah.
Part of the reason that I wanted to bring this forward is that as I'm going through these, I'm looking at the return on the investment and the efficiency of use of our dollars. And these employees are working, as Ken stated, off hours, extended hours. They're working for the children in the community. And I think that it's a very small amount of money. If not offered, the amount of hours we would lose are 3 to 4 times the value of this money. So that is something that I look for when I want to support something, that the return on the investment is 3 to 4-fold what the initial investment is because of the time that we would get, the dedication that we would get, and the forced cuts that they would have to put into the time they're currently giving because it's an exempt status and they would be removed to a non-exempt status. It would be a much greater loss than this initial investment. So I just want everybody to think about it that way. I think it's very similar to the recreation partnership. That was a small amount of money that was matched 3 times, so our return was exceptional for the support of children. And I think that this is very much in line with that. So if you look at it in that vein, the investment is very small. So,
anyone else? Leslie and Martha.
Ken, you said that this represents a portion of what is needed. Can you tell me what percentage of what the total needed that this amount represents?
Yeah, it works out. It's the total amount. Is roughly 23,000. Mm-hmm. So this is about one-third.
Thank you.
This is a worthy request, but we have pages of worthy requests, and I'm afraid I just can't do this. We've got the target funding for cooperative extension is $652,533. You requested 87 and change in OTRs, and already in the budget is 75,000 of that. And I've put in here from my own amendments. I think they're all one-time requests. Target money is really dear, and I know your folks are awesome, and they deserve it, and I support the new labor standards. I'm going to ask that if this is a priority for cooperative extension, that you find that in your budget, and I can't do it, so I'm afraid I can't support this.
Mike Klein.
I think this change in the Fair Labor Standards Act has caused a lot of consternation throughout our not-for-profit community, which are already, all of these agencies are underfunded and are struggling through the good graces of the folks that they employ and the dedication of those folks. it's going to take a year before these things shake out and how they're handled. But I think Ken has come to us with a request for not all of the employees that he's dealing with, but for four that that he feels are very important to the organization. I don't think $8,000 on target is out of line. I will support it.
Anyone else? I think we're ready to vote. All in favor of this request, please raise your hand. Opposed? One, two, three, four, five. It passes. Nine to five. Next item. Carol Chalk, Health Department.
Jim, we've got a few cooperative extension things. Would it be okay if we did Lysi 23 down on the list? And
yeah, sure. That makes sense. Glenn, you want to do that?
Yes, I make a motion on OTR number 10. Excuse me. It's an increase from $16,000 to $20,000 for Ag and Farmland Protection Plan. It's a half-time, full-time employee for Ag educator.
Is there a second to that? And a second by Dave McKenna. Discussion. Anyone want to speak for it? All in favor, please raise your hand. $4,000 to target. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, ten. Opposed? One, two, three, four. 10 to 4. Next one, Glenn. No, I'm sorry.
That's it for cooperative.
There was only two, right?
Yeah, that's it.
2-4 CCE. Back to the top. Health Department, Carol Chalk. It's OTR 61, fund addition of a half-time sanitarian, expense $29K to target.
I haven't had a chance to look. Frank and Liz are in the room. Okay. Thank you. I would like to move... Oh, what is it? OTR number 16?
No, it's 61.
It's entry number 16. OTR number 61 for the Health Department. It's funding an addition of a half a time of an FTE sanitarian for the Environmental Health Division. It would be $29,421 target money. And if I get a second, I will talk about it.
Is there a second? Dan is the second on it. Carol, you're first. Anyone else going to talk about this?
So I will ask either Frank or Liz to talk about it a little bit with us, but I will say that the reason that I pursued this and went off to learn a little bit more about it and ultimately decided to support it has to do with the needs I see related to environmental health and the issues that just keep multiplying because of the environmental hazards that are out there, whether it be the kinds of things that we haven't had enough time that our staff hasn't had enough time to deal with include fracking when it came up, hydrofracking. Hydrilla is the most recent example. And in between, there have been wood stove issues, drinking water issues that just keep expanding. And whether those are environmental hazards or not, people call with questions. And we need to have the staff to answer those questions, to be active in making sure that we have the answers where we have to go to the federal or state levels to find the answers. And while we have the staff to 11.79 in staff, as I understand it, to address the kinds of things that are mandated that we do, things like food service establishments, making sure they're inspected, sewage septic systems, to make sure that we're doing the on-site work we need to, rabies. There's lots of things that we do But when these other issues come up, we don't have the staff we used to have. So whatever, maybe I could ask, is it Frank or Liz who will come?
Frank.
Anything that you can add in sort of what it is, what are the challenges for your office in meeting these kinds of needs, and where do you see this going in terms of needing this as target as opposed to one-time issues?
Yeah, that's fine.
Great. Thank you, Carol. Just to kind of fill in, and I think you covered a good bit of it, the OTR is for a sanitarian level increase, there are, as we've outlined in the OTR, very specific regulatory mandated requirement work that we have to do, and we're struggling to meet those requirements with the existing staff. And then what has happened on top of that is these emerging issues, as Carol was just describing. I've been asked almost each year that I've come here about how are we planning for dealing with these emerging issues when they come out, and the answer has been, well, we kind of absorb that knowing that there may be some. We've hit the tipping point. The work has increased on the required regulatory things that we can plan for, and it's increased exponentially on those things that we can't plan for, the things like fracking, hydrilla, wood smoke, moving into drinking water. We had our first harmful algal bloom in Dryden Lake. There's one on the north end of Cayuga Lake as well. So we're trying to be a part of those discussions and be available and provide our guidance and a county perspective on all of those issues. And so we're trying to put some effort, some additional resource into the line level folks in order to allow our more senior level folks to be able to be a part of those emerging issues and discussions that we're facing.
So one other question. How has the staffing for this part of your office changed over time between, say, 2008-09 when we had the crash and now?
Sure. So we've had several retirements at our senior level sanitarians, five, I think, to be exact. And we've actually done some reorganization to reduce the number of senior-level folks so we could put more effort into our sanitarians as we have reduced in size during those downsizings. So we have shrunk, but we've also tried to take some internal steps to increase the availability of folks at the line level to be able to respond. And so now we're tipping back in the other way where we need additional help in order to be able to do the emerging issues as well.
I have Martha and then Rich.
I was at a recent meeting the chamber held about the drought, and Liz was one of the presenters. And so that seems like another one of those emerging issues that division is dealing with. Not going to go away. There's on page 117 in our book, there's a note here. Due to current workloads, the EHC is not adequately able to manage the children's camp permitting program. Now, we talked about this in HHS, and I'm thinking, help me with this, or maybe this is a Liz question. We heard from Sue Dale Hall that summer camps are not right now allowed to be reimbursed as daycare subsidies because we're not, and I may have this wrong, but because we're not inspecting them. It's one of those things we can't manage. We're not inspecting them, and therefore DSS cannot reimburse daycare summer camp expenses as child care. Is that right?
As much as I would like to directly link it to this, it isn't. Our regulatory requirements, the regulations do not require some of those camps to be regulated, meaning they're not included in the definitions. And because of an OCFS definition that says the camps must be inspected by the health department to be funded, there is a disconnect. But it is because our regulation doesn't include those camps in its definition.
Good. Could we inspect them? I mean, if a parent says, I want to send my kid to such and such, to Stewart Park or whatever.
We could. It's a much bigger conversation, and some of those camps, it would be cost prohibitive to meet all the requirements of our regulation for the size and scope of the service they're providing.
Okay, well, I'm going to support this. I appreciate that this is the only OTR you have in your department. I appreciate that. So I'm going to support it.
Rich John.
I just had a question on page 117. You have the full-time equivalence is 11.79. But then on page 107, you're showing public health sanitarians at 9 and then senior public health sanitarians at 3. So do you know how many you have?
Yes. It's also important to, and I'm going to look to my experts over here, I believe there are grant-funded programs that support some of those as well. So the FTEs that are funded by those grants are separate from the FTEs that are funded, that are serving our normal standard public health services.
And so how many sanitarians do you have on the ground? I guess is my question.
I would have to count them. But the difference in some of the numbers are that we also have a public health technician that's, and that position is half-time part of the year and less than that other parts of the year. We have a public health engineer as well. And then so we have 3 senior sanitarians, and we have I can count them if you give me a minute and get back to
you. I didn't mean to put you on the spot. I just didn't understand.
Brendan can probably give me the direct answer on the total number of sanitarians. Some of them are in our core programs. Also, I think it was in 2009 or thereabouts that we took on the Healthy Neighborhoods program. That's a totally grant-funded position program, and that at that time funded 1.5 sanitarians, so that took them out of our core programs. We still have a half-time sanitarian funded that works on that program. So it gets confusing to actually count which sanitarians are working on our core programs and how many versus how many we have in our division.
We have a late entry. Go ahead.
It's 8.5 sanitarians in EH.
That's not
EH. That does not include the grant programs that we were just discussing.
So with grant programs, how many sanitarians do you have?
That would be another 0.5 sanitarian added from the grant program for 9 sanitarians.
And then you have your senior.
Then we have a senior sanitarians. We also have a health educator in the grant-funded program, so to add to the mix.
I counted 12, right?
I think it's more, but okay.
Yeah. All right. You have more questions, Rich?
I was just going to say this seems important, but I think I'm not going to support this just because of our pressures on the budget. I'd ask you to come back next year. Ask again.
Okay. Levin, then Peter.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Frank, I can't seem to find it in my budget book, but I'd written myself a big note that said, why ask for this when it appears that realigned revenues can support it? There was somewhere in the discussion when you did your budget presentation that you talked about certificates and doing some realignment, which would bring in about another $30,000 to $35,000 in revenues. And I was just wondering, this is a $29,000 request. Why can't it be supported with that?
So the short answer to that is that that revenue was for our vital statistics department, and it would be inappropriate for those fees to support other public health work. We are required to only charge fees that are associated for paying for the service that we're providing. It shouldn't be a revenue generation operation for us. And they are two distinctly different programs within the department.
You said it would be inappropriate. Is there some regulation or law that makes it not that you cannot do that?
Yes. I couldn't quote it to you right now, but we could certainly get it back to you. We are only allowed to charge fees. We actually were sued when we tried to do water fees on the water systems a while back because the amount that we were proposing to charge, we couldn't justify the cost associated with that increase in fee. So it is very particular that when we collect fees, it can't be for more than what it costs us to do the service.
Okay. So I'd be interested in seeing that regulation, if you would, please. Sure. But thank you for that.
Anyone else? Peter, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, I feel unhappy. I'm going to vote against this. And the arguments for it seem very strong. And it just seems to me that this is not the kind of way we ought to be making a decision like that. It sounds to me like there's a systemic problem having to do with a bunch of things that we don't have the money to support. And I just don't feel this is the place that we ought to make these kinds of decisions. It's for somebody to look into the whole issue.
There's not a question in there,
no,
right?
No, not a question. No.
Okay.
I'm just making a statement.
I think, are we ready to vote on this? All in favor, please raise your hand. It is OTR 6129421, to target. Please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. It passes 8-6. Next one. Peter.
Can I add? I'd like to add something to the agenda before we continue. To add something to the agenda.
Yes, yeah, sure.
It's appropriate at this time because of what one we're coming up to, and I'm happy to give an explanation of why. But number 41, Kevin and I have already talked about this, which is the two corrections officers for the jail.
That was on the front side of the last one, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Kevin, wasn't that on the first sheet that we had, the 41?
No, this is the first time we've had an amendment related to this.
Oh, it's the first time we've had an amendment? Oh, yeah.
Happy to give an explanation.
I don't know what the rules are here. Do we need to vote on
that? It was an email that got lost.
Yeah, is there a second for it? Martha, discussion.
Is this on adding it or on?
I'm sorry?
Is this on adding it or on?
Yeah,
no, we're right to a vote on two. Okay.
Yeah. May we see the figures?
I'm sorry?
May we see the figures?
Yeah.
Kevin's working on
it. Anna, go ahead.
So I've, as some of you know, I've spent a lot of time up at the jail. I think at this point I've used up about 10 hours of Captain Bunce's time in tours and conversations, as well as Mr. Roberson, who's here somewhere. Can't see him. Getting tours, talking to inmates, having extensive conversations of the needs of the jail as part of the jail committee. My interest, obviously, in this context is to support the needs so that the quality of life of the inmates, as well as the quality of life of the staff, is such that the experience can lead to strong re-engagement of inmates into the community after they leave the jail. And one of the there are a lot of things that I've seen there. For example, when I was on my tour, we went out to the gardens, and they were a bit overgrown, hadn't been used in a while, and the response was, well, there has to be a corrections officer here in order for the inmates to be here. And at any one time, I have 3 to 4 corrections officers out on average because of sick leave or incidences, and they're on paid leave, which means he is spread so thin that he isn't able to staff that for that program and for that support. There's also a strain on supporting programs that they can have then with inmates because of the strain on the corrections officer staff at any one time. I had a long conversation with the medical support team there as well that are experiencing the same thing. And right now they have a nurse who is there only from 8 to 4. If anything happens after 4 o'clock, for example, if someone's brought in and they are in intensive care because they are needing detox, a corrections officer has to stay with that person in their jail cell one-on-one the full time. And that then immediately goes to overtime if the staff is too thin, or if that person needs to be transported to the hospital because there isn't a nurse at that time, again, that immediately goes to overtime if the staff is too thin. And since the staff is consistently thin because they don't have enough of the corrections officers on staff at any one time, they aren't able to fill the needs and support that they need for the inmates. So I think that creating a scenario where they have enough support would reduce the strain on the corrections officers, but it would actually also support the entire environment for both the inmates and the staff. And I urge everyone to think about this very carefully. I recognize that it's Target. I recognize that it is $115,000. I think that this need is great for both the inmates, for everything that we're facing with the jail right now. I think that this will actually head off some major, larger problems later. So I'm happy to continue to talk about this. If anyone from the sheriff's office wants to get up and add any information to that, I would obviously invite that.
Let me ask a question. You're talking about two people?
Correct.
That $115,000 for two seemed very, very low to me.
There needs to be fringe added. That's
And it's probably more like $200,000.
That is all that.
Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, that's the full price. Remember that under the new, relatively new correction officer agreement, COs started at a very low rate,
okay,
and over time they ramp up. So you're seeing the benefit of those relatively low starting salaries in there.
All right. They had people down. Dooley's over here. Martha was first.
Well, just to correct, this doesn't, on page 238, OTR number 47, that's the salary figure, and fringes is given as an additional $57,000.
See what page you're on?
Section 4, page 238. Now.
No, that can't be right.
No.
Is this...
No, I'm looking at OTR 47. It says corrections officer. Oh, I'm sorry, there's the overtime.
Yes.
The 115 is the full amount.
Hold it.
Got it, okay.
Okay, we're going with the 115.
Sorry about that.
This is okay. A very small amount for the support.
Dooley and then me.
Jim, I was under the impression that any one legislator could add anything to the list. It doesn't need to be voted on to be added. I appreciate it needs to be correct, but I don't think we have to vote to add it.
Okay, it's on. What?
So are we doing it now, or are we doing
it? Yeah, we're doing it now.
No,
because the reason I brought it up now is because the next amendment is also the jail, and I figured, as we've always done, we do everything together to make things easier. Since they're all here in support of this, I'm requesting that we do both of these amendments together. Whether it be after Peter's amendment or before it.
Well, it's on the floor, and we're going to deal with it now. So, back to you.
Yeah, I thought Dooley was going to say more than that. Okay. Yeah, thanks for correcting me on the numbers. Even so, I am really nervous about adding two. I know we need all these things, but I'll wait for the discussion, but I'm probably going to move to amend this to one, to adding one, because we're also looking at the next one that is on the list is a halftime in law enforcement that wasn't even in the book. So So that's where I am. It's like I'm not questioning that we need this. I'm just really nervous about the numbers, so I'm probably going to move to make it one.
Let me make my comment. I will agree with Martha on the one. And you gentlemen can correct me if I'm wrong. We have seven people off on disability now.
Yeah, I counted right before I left tonight. I have seven people on disability.
So that's 1/6 of the four.
Right.
That's correct.
Right. Okay, out of 42. And hopefully some of those people will return,
yes.
Maybe?
Yes, I expect that doesn't happen all the time. I mean, they get better.
Right.
Someone comes back,
right.
But you know, then somebody else might have something else go on too.
Anna, thank you.
Just very quickly, the one thing that I would add is the extent of the strain, particularly on junior corrections officers, because of this consistent lack of full staff, I think is ultimately leading to a lot more cost for us in the long run. And I also just want us to consider that. I'd like to invite our guests.
Yeah, may I make a comment first before they do? My other question would be, if this person, is it a new person, or would you be looking to transfer someone? Or
we have to see who is available.
Do you have a list? I don't have
anybody right now. We do have an active list.
Okay.
And we're working to recruit from that.
Okay. Anyone else over here? Leslie.
Mr. Chair, originally when I saw this on our budget, I was game to support it. But looking at what has gone on thus far and the numbers and where we're going with our levy, I am not a place that I can support this right now, although I'm not questioning the need at all. I feel very strongly that we need to have our corrections officers, but I can't support this right now.
Anna, you had, before I interrupted you, where you were wanting the gentleman to speak to us. Go ahead and address the question to them.
We've spoken about this briefly, but I would love for you both in your own words to share. As you know, my interest is how this supports the work that you're trying to do with the inmates, not simply just house them for the time that they're there. And I think that that's a really important thing and a message for people to understand and what this would support for that.
Mentioned something else a little while ago, and there's a lot of things that are involved with these two positions and some of the other OTRs, how they kind of interconnect. Obviously, if you have more personnel, you should be able to utilize them, which would then cut down on overtime costs. You did mention a very valid fact, and that is the way this office works, when there is a need for additional staff, which I hope you can appreciate is often when you have a sixth of your workforce out at one time, the junior, the most inexperienced, the least paid folks that are there get forced in. And it's not uncommon for them to work 16-hour shifts 2-3 days a week, a lot of times on their days off they get forced in. And as you can imagine, that gets really old really fast, and we have a problem with retention because of it. We just had one today. That is leaving. She's been here for a year and a half, roughly. She is leaving to go to Broome County. She let us know today. So now we have to go back and we have to re-canvas, re-interview, hire someone else. And it becomes somewhat cyclical over time. So that's part of it, too, to try to lessen some of that.
How many new hires have you had to do this year?
Since 2014, I've hired 26 people at the jail.
Peter Stein.
I certainly am not against adding two more corrections officers if we need it, but it seems to me this is not the right place to do that. This ought to be brought to public safety.
Please excuse me, but this is the budget process, and this is the time.
I'm just trying to make an argument. That's all.
Okay, this is the time you add and subtract things.
All right. Well, okay.
All right. And every legislator has the opportunity to do whatever they please, and Anna has move this, and you know, I think we have to go to fruition here. So,
if I could just say a couple of things too about the morale that we deal with the officers, you know, that says it right there with the 26 people that we've hired in 2 years, because that's not 26 positions. That's, I don't know exactly how many positions that is, but it's a lot less than that. So what happens is we use these people up. We use them. We force them for overtime constantly. Also consider that each one of these people that we hire, there's a training period. You know, we have to allow them time to learn the job. That's all lost on these people and on the officers that left. We continue to do this. We want to retain these people. We want professionalism. We want people in there who are in a good mood. We don't want people who are overtired, who are grumpy, however you want to put it. But that's what happens when you start overworking some of your staff. And then the people that we're dealing with, those are the reasons that we need people on their best doing the job that they have to do.
Okay. Over here, we're talking about the two resolution, right? The amendment.
Okay.
Martha, Carol, are you going to say something?
Yep. When it's my turn.
Well, all right, and then Leslin after.
All right. You make a great case, but I'm going to move to amend this to one additional.
Is there a second, Mike? Okay. We're discussion on the amendment moving to one. Will.
So, a question for Ray or Brian. Obviously, two is better than one, but does one help? And would it make any significant difference? And I guess what I'm trying to get, is there some magical tipping point in your staffing that truly will address the problems you've raised?
You know, as far as one helping, absolutely. That will help. But also I want to let you guys know that it's not like we haven't tried to do things to adjust our staff or to help all this out either. In 2013, we rearranged the people in the jail. We did away with the lieutenant position, and we actually hired another officer because we saw that back then. This is not new. We see this issue. We need officers on the floor getting the job done. So that was done in 2013 with Sheriff Lansing. On top of that, we have attempted to negotiate part-timers because we felt that would alleviate a lot of this issue as well. We could do that, you know, not with the fringes and everything else that comes with a full-timer. But we have attempted to do these things but have failed with that one. So that's why we're standing here today talking about two positions to bring them back into the jail. And what was your other question with that?
Well, I guess, you know, do you have some confidence that those two truly would be, you know, really transformative in terms of your situation?
So when we were looking at the part-timer positions, we used the equivalent of two people Monday through Friday to fill in some overtime. We studied it over, I think it was, of course, about 3 years. To see, you know, historically how much overtime we spent. And then we went from there and noted that two people in two positions on my day shift were going to actually save the county a considerable sum of money in loss of overtime costs. You know, I mean, we wouldn't be paying out overtime, but instead regular straight time to these part-timers. So we noticed, I can't remember exactly what that figure was. I'm not sure if Joe might remember. I don't know.
It was considerable.
We're going down this way.
Thank you.
I have Carol and then Leslin and Mike and Rich. And
wait, was Martha, were you done?
I was looking at the staffing list on page 234, and I saw it shifts over time. So you've got, I'm also looking... You went on sergeants, you went in 2014 from five sergeants to six the following year. And under sheriff is on this list. So, Brian, your position is in this bucket?
In the budget.
Yeah, it's in the budget. It's funded through the jail, but.
But you're not operating. You're not working in the cells during the day. You know. Yeah. Okay.
No.
Before we go down the row, the number 115 is for two. The new number is 57,636. And Carol, go ahead. You're next.
Has that been voted on?
Oh, okay.
We haven't voted. On the floor.
So yeah, okay. You know what? I'll wait until we're
okay.
done with that.
Leslie.
So this question might be totally inappropriate. What makes the officers who stay? What made you stay? And what is it that we need to be doing to get people to stay? Have you checked it out?
Well, I guess I could thank you guys for building a house, raising a family. You know, that's what made me stay. Those are the things. The people that we hire at that low rate to begin with are these are brand new young folks. They don't have a big tie down to communities, and they're looking to move forward and make something. You know,
I guess I'm getting to the whole aspect of recruitment. And maybe we need to be recruiting differently. You know, if we understand what is making people stay, we perhaps need to be recruiting differently to get people to not come get our training and bounce. So, you know, I'm just looking at it from that angle. So forgive me if it's an inappropriate question and you don't need, you know why. But it's, you know, from a workforce diversity and inclusion perspective, I'm thinking more of perhaps we need to be recruiting differently. I know civil service has something to do with it as well, but yeah, we should look at that.
Mike.
I support the amendment to change this from 2 to 1. I think the number of folks out at 7 is it makes it really hard on this department. And unfortunately, I don't think that's going to change a lot. I think we're always going to have a certain number of people out. Whether we like it or not, somebody's going to get hurt or someone's going to get ill, and we need to have a little bit more backup, and I would support the amendment to one person.
Anyone else?
Why I won't support two is because of the reasons that Leslin is raising. How much are we going to be able to spend? All of these things have good arguments for them.
Back to you, Rich.
I wanted to echo what Anna was saying about thanking you for all the time you've given me and touring me around the jail and explaining.
Thank you guys. Actually, thank you for coming up.
I support the one CO position. I fully agree two would be better and you would fully use them. I hear what Leslin's saying about the impact on the budget of adding all of that at once.
Mike? Go ahead.
I just want to, I plan to vote on the one. I'm kind of hoping that maybe we can find that $57,636 someplace else in the budget because that's a big expense. So hoping we can do that. Clearly it's needed. I am hoping that the money that we are putting into our alternatives will bear some fruit so that maybe the pressure is relieved a little bit up on the jail. So.
Carol,
yeah, so
I'm the one.
I will put myself in line here. Since people are jumping in, committing to what they'll vote for on the one versus the two, when we had our earlier and more extensive discussion about the 7 OTRs for the sheriff's office other side and the 9 OTRs on the jail, you talked about this being a lower priority now that the state is willing to talk about the variances, Brian. And so at that point, I had decided that of the OTRs that are in here and the ones that I feel like I can support in the budget, that this wasn't one. Because I would prefer to wait and see where that goes before we start increasing our staff. And as I recall the discussion, it had to do with the need to send an officer each time we have a board out. Am I remembering this correctly?
Yes, and I could explain that a little bit.
On the road instead of in the jail. And so now that we have the state talking to us, this became a lower priority.
Okay, so let me kind of put all of that in perspective, hopefully. The variances that we've been operating since 96 or 7, I don't know how long it is, understand that we've been doing that with the same staff level that we have. Actually, I'll say this. In 2002, there was a manpower study for the jail as to how many staff that we needed in there. That was completed, and we hired 6 officers at that time. That was in 2002. Some people might remember that from on this board. That study is completed is supposed to be completed every 10 years. That was done in 2002. Just letting you guys know that. That's done by the commission. They come in, they review what we do every day, and how many staff you would need to complete each position. Counties surrounding us have had this done recently, and they have been told that they need to hire several people. This is another reason that we're standing here today, bringing this forward, because we feel that if they do come and do a study, that they're going to find that we need more officers. To talk about the variances a little bit and the need for these two officers, if we lost our variances, yes, we'd be on the road a little bit more. We did that before. We did that in, I think it was 6 and 7 or 7 and 8 when we lost variances before. We were on the road a lot, boarding people out with the same staff level. What it entails at that point is more overtime.
So where does this now stand in relation to the 8 other? I guess a couple of them got funded by the administrator's budget, but for the ones there are still 1, 2. What?
In my priority, it's
where
number
does it
one.
Stand in priority?
But I'm not sure Brian wants to change that.
I don't remember saying that it was a low priority. I do remember saying there are admittedly a couple that were not supported by the county administrator, which were basically suggested ways of doing the budget, our personal budget, bills basically that have to be paid anyway, one way or the other. And I'm speaking specifically about overtime and premium pay. I understand if you didn't want to. I understand why the recommendation was what it was. But as far as this one, I don't believe I ever said that it was a low priority. And really, as time goes on, it's a bigger priority because now it all kind of everything kind of comes together. We have we have going what we do with the Commission of Corrections. So we're demonstrating to them that we're looking into this, we're looking into the physical plant, and also we're. You know, we're adding staff. We're coming at it from a whole bunch of different angles. And I've got to tell you that just the mere fact that we put this OTR in did a little something to the morale of the corrections officers that were there. This isn't anything new. This is something they've been asking for. Even when I was on this body and part of, on the Public Safety Committee and in negotiations with them, all that kind of stuff, I've heard it, and I've certainly heard it since I've been up at the sheriff's office. And the question was, would they settle for one? They would be very happy, even if it was just one. That's kind of how desperate the staffing levels are, and just even if it just helps just a little bit to use some of their benefit time, you know, quality of life type stuff? I know somebody asked that question, would one be okay? And, you know, quite frankly, anything would be okay.
I have Anna, and then Dooley, and then Martha. And, you know, I think we can get to a vote on this. You know, we've been around here a couple times. Go ahead, Anna.
I'll pass.
Dooley?
I just want to note that on page 4237, there are four OTRs that are all priority one. So I understand that they are equally important to you, but it makes it harder for us. With respect to this particular request, what is the dollar amount that one correction officer's addition would make the county tax bill on a median-priced home go up? Kevin? And I will assume that two would double that.
Dooley's up there.
Is there a dollar figure?
1642.
I just put it in place.
So it raised it how much? I'm sorry, I see a total.
So you were asking about the tax bill on a median-priced home?
Would it go up a dollar? Would it go up $10?
So this is the number to watch right here. Can you see where the cursor is?
Up yes.
Here?
$1.39 or something. $4.36 from $2.97 or something.
Kevin, what is the number?
I'm too tired to do it in my head. I'm sorry.
Kevin, say the number out loud.
So it would go from $2.97. That would be the increase on the tax bill on a median-priced home, and it would go to $4.36.
Okay. All right. So it's $2.97 for one, right?
It's $1.39.
No. $1.39.
Yeah.
$1.30. All right. We're talking two. What we have on the floor is one.
Okay. I can support two.
Anyone else?
Well, what? Isn't it $2.97 where we are with the whole rest of all the amendments we've made so far? Yep.
That's true.
Okay. So everything we've done so far right now adds $2.97. to the tax bill, okay? If we added one, that would go up to 436, okay? If we added two, that would add another $1.40 or whatever it is. Okay, my question was, on the review, if the commission comes in to do another workforce study, I thought that they do that based on the physical space, actually, so that because they have certain stations in the physical space. And that was why we needed a written confirmation when we added seven beds that they weren't going to ask for another officer based on the layout. So we haven't changed the layout. We're not changing the layout since 2002, correct?
Correct. But I think they're going to also look at how many transports we're doing, if that's increased. And I'd say it has quite a bit. You know, on top of variances, we go to a lot of rehabs all through the state. So there's a lot of other things going on.
Okay. All right. Okay, thanks.
Dave McKenna.
Yeah, I'm going to. Well, I'll support one or two. I prefer two. And the reason I prefer two is that overtired, overworked officers are a problem to themselves and to everybody else that's around them. Accidents happen. Mistakes get made. It's cheap protection to hire the second officer. So I'm pushing for the second officer.
What we have here is a vote on one. And I think we're ready to do that. All in favor of the amendment adding one correction officer, please raise your hand.
Change.
I have one, two, three, four, five, six. But again, one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, 9, 10, 11, opposed to adding 1, 1, 2, Peter, did you vote yes?
I voted yes.
Okay. So it's 12 to 2. So we're adding one.
That changes the main motion.
Right, changes the main motion to one.
To one.
We have to vote again. Okay. And we have to vote one more time. So all in favor of the main motion now, which is one, please raise your hand. Opposed? 14, zip. You're good for one. I want to take a break for like 10 minutes if we can.
Yeah, can I make a comment for the public? And
How can I stop you?
I'll be fast. We're supposed to go to like 7:30, right?
No, 8:30. Oh, 8:30. You know, I neglected to tell you at the beginning of the meeting, all these meetings have been scheduled for 3 hours, voting meetings. We looked it up. And we've always scheduled voting meetings for 3 hours, not 2 hours.
Okay.
And I relented the other night. So.
What happened to the food, Mr. Chair?
Well, I bought it.
Oh, we got the gluten. Where's the gluten-free?
Well, there's some without meat for Rich John.
Okay. Martha? So my point was going to be that I thought we were only going another 20 minutes. The public should understand we have a list of things on an agenda. Anna added that one because the sheriff's department was up next. I don't think anybody here is interested in, like, surprising each other with a motion that's not on the list, having told folks that we could raise anything at any time. My sense is that we aren't going to do anything.
Please, if they want to stay, let them stay.
Can I call a question?
We're 10 minutes. What?
Can I call the question on what Martha just raised so that we can let people go home?
There is no question.
Well,
we're going to take a 10-minute break. I'll be back at 21 after. We are rebooting now, for those of you who know what that means. And we're going to take a look at – I'm sorry? What we're going to take a look at here is Peter Stein, Sheriff's Office, funding for part-time sheriff deputy to manage the body camera system, et cetera, et cetera. And then we will do Glenn Morey and the Workforce Development Board right after that so those people can return to their homes. Here we are. We're rebooted. Joe, do you have something?
I can help get this one started.
Okay, go ahead.
If that were Peter, right with you, and I'll just get us started.
Thank you very much. Go ahead.
Brian can get some details. I asked for this to be added to the list of the amendments. It's something that came out of sequence. It happened after we had prepared our budget. But after talking to Brian about what you'll hear about with this part-time position, I felt it was worthy of the legislature taking a look at it. I think personally it makes a great deal of sense. Again, I don't want to go into the detail. I'll let Brian explain the details. But it's here for that reason. It's a new item. It was not a part of the budget, but that's why. It just came late.
Brian?
Before we leave tonight. Me?
Hold on.
Okay.
Let's get it on the floor. Peter Stein?
Yeah.
You want to move it?
's OTR.
And it's a second by Dave McKenna. It is it's a new OTR.
Yep.
Go ahead.
Shall I talk about it?
You can, and then we'll have Brian talk about it. And Joe and whoever. But go ahead.
Well, no point in three of us talking about it. They know more about it than I do. So why don't you go ahead, Brian?
Okay. It's a new OTR. I understand it's not an ideal time for that to happen. But this is not a new thing. Commitment was made last year to get it into
our officers wearing body cameras. You allocated a lot of money for the equipment. There were some bumps in the road along the way in terms of, possible perb intervention, possible lawsuit, that sort of stuff, kind of class action stuff, not towards us, but just body cameras in general. And been asked about the body camera program often at public safety and even, the full legislature. And we kind of took an easy-as-you-go approach to let a lot of things get fettered out. And quite frankly, we don't have the staff nor the time to be, let's call it, guinea pigs. I just want to let somebody else make the mistakes and get the programs going, so on and so forth. The city was kind enough to do that. Their program works very well right now. So we knew the day was going to come where we were going to have to staff this position. And frankly, I wasn't even sure how much staff time it would take to administer the body cam program. I knew that within our own staff, everybody is extremely busy, sometimes doing two and three jobs. We weren't going to find it. In dealing with the person at the city that actually does deal with body cameras, she told me that it's not a full-time job, 40 hours a week. She said you could accomplish that. You could get your program up and running and do all the indexing, the archiving, disposing of old video, that sort of stuff. You could do that in with a half-time position because she's doing it. We have the ability through our last negotiation to hire part-time people on the roadside of the sheriff's office. That was a negotiated item. We've never hired anyone as a part-timer as of yet because we never funded it. We didn't have a job for them to do. Now we do. This is a perfect opportunity to use the first part-time person. You'll see where the salary is 44,796. That's a salary of $30,000 with fringe. We are not going to be spending $44,000. We plan to hire a retired officer, which means that we will not have to pay that person pension and health. It will be $30,000. I understand why we have to budget it at that, because fringes are spread throughout all the FTEs in the county. But as far as layout from our budget, it will be that $30,000 figure.
Swap.
I'm sorry?
Swap.
You'll see up there that we envision this to be a shared service. We are still working on that. We believe that we're going to be able to, and there are some memorandums of agreement and so forth that have to be signed. But this person may be able to also take over the work currently being done by the city of Ithaca and their body camera program. If you remember, we had an OTR last time I was here for $12,000 for our contribution to the city for SWAT operations. We had never done that. There'd been discussions about that over the last year. There's at least some agreement from officials that were knowledgeable of that, that it seemed like that was probably something that we should do anyway. That's why I had the $12,000 OTR. If we take over, if this part-time person does our body camera work and the city's body camera work, that contribution would go away. They would not expect an in-kind contribution for SWAT. They would basically take responsibility for all expenses for SWAT. We would pay in part this person. So in essence, we are getting our portion or our person to do the body camera work we need for basically a net $18,000 plus the $12,000 that we no longer have to then send to. That's the way I think of it. I've got to tell you, the last thing that we wanted to do was to come to you and say, hey, we need to hire someone full time to run this, because you're talking about probably I don't know salary and benefits, eighty maybe $90,000.
Yeah, 100.
We definitely did not want to do that, so we had to think creatively. How are we going to accomplish what we need to accomplish for the least amount of money? As it turns out, if this is agreed to, it actually becomes a win-win for the county and the city, and it accomplishes what we've all said we want to do, and that is start using these body cameras. We're just not able to with that.
Yeah. It makes sense to me, Brian, that that if we're going to have them, then we ought to have someone in place to do the, you know, dot the I's and cross the T's. Rich, you had your hand up, and then Martha.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Carol Anna.
I agree with everything you say there, but we don't have the program ready. We don't have the agreement with the city yet. Would it work to make this one-time money until we can get our ducks in a row elsewhere? And I'd also add that I did have a chance to speak with one of the village chiefs, and I think this is a great example, because this came up, that this is a shared service that truly could be shared. It would help all of the local municipalities.
It absolutely is.
To my question, one time?
Is there another question first? Or?
I'm sorry, I was just going to speak.
Oh,
and else. Go ahead.
I think we all can assume that the body cameras are going to be used going forward, and that eventually it would have to be put into Target. If it's your choice to fund it as one time for this year, these MOUs and things have to be in place fairly quickly. And let's face it, this isn't the first time that we've had a technology shared service with the city of Ithaca. I mean, the whole records management system, Spillman, is used by both of us. It's housed by the county. The 911 center, same sort of thing. But you're absolutely right. It is a designed to be a shared service, and it would be nice that and I'm told it would be fairly simple to include villages when they do obtain cameras and get them for themselves.
I guess my point is it's going to grow. We just don't know where yet and how. And so if this legislature funded it as a one-time with the expectation that, yeah, they're not going to go away, we will have a lot more time to understand it and to hone down what the budget numbers really should be into 2018.
I think, Rich, Brian's right. I have spoken to some of the villages, and one of the, you know, and even with us, as Brian explained, one of our reasons to pull back was we knew that we couldn't come to you and ask for a full-time position, and it really, you know, can be done. We found out from this other person with a halftime. I really think that that part that the county is going to give towards this, hopefully, could substantially come down because the villages can't afford to hire full-time or part-time people to put the time into it. And if they do come on with shared services also, I know you smiled about Brian's math of 12,000 from 30 is 18, but I know what he's getting at. But I think that we could see that with the villages. You know, you offer something, you know, 2,000, whatever the figure would be. So I think it could be.
I have Martha Carroll, Anna, Peter, Mike.
So I'm a little confused. So the city already has somebody doing this half-time.
The city has a full-time sergeant. As part of her duties, she does she administers their body camera program.
And she said for the city, it's about a half-time job, or it's about half of her job. Is that right?
It's less than that. For her portion of it. This halftime job would be the city and the county.
Okay. City has something like 72 officers, as I remember. Am I right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the workload is proportionate to how many officers are on the road, right?
Yes.
So they have 72, and I'm looking at page 227 of our book. And we've got 44 altogether in the sheriff's office. On the road, am I to understand, 26 road patrol deputies. Are the sergeants and the lieutenant also on the road?
Yes.
So that's 34. Are any of these others actually on the road and wearing a camera?
Investigators would be. We've opened up discussions. We would feel it would be a good idea for parts of our corrections staff to be wearing them as well in the jail. We do have video in the jail, but as you can appreciate, videos don't go into the cells. So if there's a problem in a cell, it'd be nice to have a video recording of what happened in that cell.
So do you think the COs would wear them all the time but only turn them on if they go into a cell? Because if something's going on, you don't want to go stop and have to go get a camera, right? They would wear them?
They wear them, right.
They wear them but just only turn them on when they go in?
Yep. It's just a click of a button.
Yeah.
Okay, so that means we're getting closer to parity with the city.
Yeah.
If you're counting that. Okay, I guess where I was going was it didn't seem like exactly equal partnership here.
Well, when I started out with this, I was looking for somebody just to do ours.
Right. Okay.
And as it turns out, you would need—I don't know. Let's call it a quarter person, mm-hmm. if it's half. A really hard thing to do when you're trying to hire someone for 10 hours a week.
No, I think you've settled. So if we've got, if they've got 72 officers and we've got 40, if we got 34 plus 44, then we're like, okay, I'm not going to nickel and dime. Mm-hmm. But so that's roughly a half and half proposition.
Mm-hmm.
So I can understand that. However, I don't buy the $12,000 SWAT thing. I really appreciate your sending the information on the number of calls and the number of hours per year. I was not impressed with that as a need for us to pay for SWAT. However, if you're going to work on an MOU that says this is a shared position and the city's going to cover part of the costs, I think I'm okay with that. I think what Rich was trying to do was kind of put a dollar amount in that while this is getting worked out, but I also understand this is going to be target going forward. So if we can come up with the right dollar amount, then I think I would support that. I'm looking at Joe.
I want to make sure we're clear, though, as we understand the conversation. So this would be the price. So at this price, we would do our body cam work and the city's body cam work, and presumably as this person masters the craft, others could come in and we could still do it at this cost. So I wasn't sure if you were suggesting that maybe the city is going to be contributing toward this cost, as some of it would be offset by a city payment to us of some kind.
That's what it sounded like, no?
No, that's...
You're saying we're getting a SWAT?
It's a swap. Swap for SWAT. You can get that out this late. And it's not, you know, it's not direct cash exchange or anything, but it's knowing that that SWAT's claim was coming. And we have looked at the argument, and there are some compelling things that are behind it. So this would be us providing a shared service to the city and the villages, but in return we get rid of this claim that's looming out there from the city that we really owe them some money for SWAT. That's
okay, if you promise. Okay, now, but the other one more question. You said that the real cost is $30,000, so there's $14,796 that shows here. Now, we don't have rollover for staff and fringe costs, right?
Correct.
So that won't build in $15,000 worth of rollover a year. Okay, got it.
Carol, Anna, Peter, Mike, Dan, and a guy standing out in the hall. go ahead, Carol.
Okay. Maybe so. My first question got answered. So this is only going to be one person who get for both the city and the county who will get trained and have to learn how to.
Oh, she's already trained.
Do this. Right, well, whatever. It's to stay current, or it's not two separate people, half for the city and half for us. Okay. So that answers that part of my question. Of course, notwithstanding the fact that this city is a residents or about a third of us. And the amount needs to be this instead of the $18,000 that Brian mentioned?
No. So the amount?
Is actually only going to cost...
So if you hire a retired former employee, cop, the most they can make is $30,000. It's coincidental. That's about a half-time position here. So the salary being paid to this person would be $30,000. The person will be very likely a retired officer. So you don't make a pension payment toward that person. And because they're in a retiree health plan, you don't have to make a health contribution to it. So the fringes that you see here, really the person won't be charging us for fringe, but the way we allocate our fringe costs, take all of our pension costs, all of our health costs, divide it by all the payroll, and that's how we spread it. So arithmetically, that's what we need to put into this budget.
I understand the part of that that's why the fringe has to be there. I'm not understanding why it isn't the 30 minus 12 for the base, so the 18 plus whatever fringe would be on 30.
There is no fringe. Again, the city, in our view at least, has made a pretty good case for a $12,000 contribution toward their SWAT costs.
So you take the 30.
So that's what Brian was saying. 12, so if you take the 30 and you look at what this claim was, it was out there. So our net cost, if you are willing to go with that argument, I think you should, our net cost is really more like $18,000.
And then fringe on 30, which would be what?
For almost $15,000.
So that makes 33. So how do we get from 33 to...
There is no fringe.
There's no fringe on 30.
30 is the total.
30 is what we'll pay the person.
Yep.
Plus we...
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry
I mentioned...
The SWAT money.
Yeah. Okay. It's the... That turns out to be an absence of a payment.
May I interrupt one moment? What I would like to hear is... How much is it going to cost the city of Ithaca? Never mind the SWAT money or any of it. What do we, or the Tompkins County, what do we have to put in the budget, hopefully one time, for 2017?
$30,000.
$30,000.
Plus fringe.
No, there are no fringe. No fringe.
I understand we're not paying fringe, but we allocate fringe, so it's up there at $44,796.
Okay.
It is. So we'd be.
But it's not going to be spent on this person.
I understand that. But if you take 30,000 and you add fringe to it, you get to 44,796.
We would need to raise our taxes by either 44,796 or we would need to bring the money out of reserve to fund it as a one time at 44,796. That's the way you should look at it.
Okay. Can we move on? Anna.
I did understand SWAT, and I appreciated it. Basically, the city is just saying, we're not going to bother you with this anymore. We were bothering you. Now we're not going to. That's all it means, and that's what I understand, and I appreciate it. That's it. Like, so otherwise, the math, it's $30,000 for this person to do this work for halftime. And I think that as long as we think about it that way, it's fine. I think that the other things that stuck out to me that we need to keep in mind is that she's already trained. The city has already gone through, and I appreciate that the county said, let's wait a year. Let's let the city do all the hard work to figure it out, to work out all the kinks. This person got really trained. She's doing it really well, so she's really efficient, and she's retiring. So let's take her on as half-time to do the work for us now that she's already the expert in it. She's going to do it really efficiently. She'll do it for both for half-time. We don't have to pay her the fringe. We don't have to pay her the health. It's a win-win-win because we are also creating a shared services, which is everything we've already said that we really want to promote. So we're promoting shared services. She's already trained. She's the expert in Tompkins County. We don't have to deal with them nagging us about SWAT. No, and personnel to support hardware that we've already purchased. We've already purchased the hardware. We've already got the cameras, but we have no one to evaluate the video that comes in every day. Every single day the video comes in. So if we don't have that personnel, we can't use the body cameras. So I'll just...
All right, Peter, Mike, and Dan.
Well, I think it's obvious... I mean, here we are. We're committed to the cameras. There's no question about that. You don't have to open the newspapers to realize that that's very important in a couple of small operations that really can tear a community into pieces. This is very important. And I think it's nice to see that we're working with our neighbors to do it in the most efficient way. And I don't think we have to add the nickels and dimes to see are we paying our fair share. It sounds wonderful to me, and I see no point in making it one time. They're going to be with us longer than I'm going to be with you, okay? I'm wondering, has anyone ever contacted Cornell and say, are they interested in body cameras and whether they would like to be part of this operation? I mean, they're a pretty big police force they have there, right?
They are. They are not with the rest of law enforcement. They and Ithaca College are not with the rest of the law enforcement as far as the records management system that we use. And there is an integration piece, trying not to get too technical, but our records management system, Spillman, that we use at that gets initiated at the 911 center, when these calls come in, that integration does a lot of the indexing of the call right then. That's so you're not duplicating efforts as far as case number, date, time, officers involved, all that kind of stuff. It's already recorded in our system, which we use, the city uses, the villages use. Cornell has their own.
Isn't it the Spillman system?
Yeah, but it's their own Spillman system. Okay. It's not.
We're getting in the weeds here, folks. Mike and Dan.
I had a different take on the figures on the SWAT usage. I thought a third of them outside, almost a third of them outside the city was a significant figure. And I like the idea of integrating this this request for contribution into this this position. But I would certainly want to see that memorialized in writing.
Yep.
So that a couple years from now, we don't hear from the city, well, that was just for then. We still want another contribution.
Mm-hmm.
So it really, really needs to be done.
Yep.
Dan.
So a couple of, I support this. I have just a couple of concerns, and one's related to that. I don't think we should concede that we owe the city any money on SWAT. However, I also want it memorialized. I don't know how to do both, because that would be important, that just what you said, that a few years down the line, somebody knows that that was the thinking in this. The other thing is, right now, you know, this is a good deal we're going to get, that this person's a retiree and is not going to get. But what if the next person isn't? We're going to need, then we're going to need to pay a bigger salary and fringe and all that. So I'm also wondering then how long the MOU would be. Is it a year-by-year thing or not?
That answer your last one first. I would imagine that there would be an initial implementation of an MOU, and if both sides are smart, you'd have a sunset clause to say, okay, we've started this, let's agree to come back in a year, and if it needs to be tweaked, then it does. Not the money, but just the semantics of it. But then it should be memorialized, and we have a lot of them. We have a lot of MOUs for a lot of different things. Your first question again?
Not conceding about the SWAT.
Oh, well.
30,000 is needed.
Okay. Well, let me ask you more about the second part. You said, you know, it sounds like you're thinking a year-to-year agreement, but not, you said it wouldn't include the money. I mean, that is my concern, is that if in the future this retiree moves to Florida, we have to hire someone that does get fringe, then...
That was it. Contract that we signed with the union, they agreed that we can hire part-time people. Regardless, and we look for part of the agreement also is that those part-time people would be our own retirees first, which was a logical request from them. We don't currently have any retired folks from the sheriff's office that we could hire into this position even if we wanted to. You can reinstate anyone from civil service that has retired from either a sheriff's office or a city police department or whatever. But anyways, as far as that agreement, the agreement is that yes, we can hire part-time people, but they are not entitled to benefits. Whether they are a transfer or a reinstatement, or if they're a brand new person. That's in the collective bargaining agreement.
Thank you.
Anything else? Julie?
So I'm glad it finally came out clearly so I could understand that this retired person we were planning to hire is actually the same person that you've been talking about from the city. That was kind of kept quiet for a while. I am very concerned that although the city may have developed the standards that and criteria that it is concerned about for body camera documents, that's not something that I remember us as a legislature developing. And it's not clear to me that I want to wholesale adopt whatever the city came up with. How will that happen?
Nor am I. We have a sit-down scheduled with our union. My personal opinion is that the city has a good policy. It's a bit voluminous, in my opinion. It can certainly be simpler. But we have to work with our own union. And the basic tenets of it are all the same. Basically that, you know, the camera's on when you have an interaction with the public.
How does the legislature get involved in that policy?
It's a departmental policy.
We already talked about it at public safety last year.
Yeah, we had...
I'm not on public safety. I don't remember.
You were last year.
No, never.
Okay.
Brian,
yes.
Let me ask a question or two. The policy of running the cameras, have you looked at, first of all, have you talked to the Sheriff's Association about the kinds of things, and have you dealt with other counties who already have a policy, county government as opposed to city government? Ken?
We have, Jim. I've talked to Niagara County Sheriff Jim Blator. He's had his for about 4 years, 3 to 4 years. He's got a policy that we've looked at that we surely want to look at again when we make our own. The Sheriff's Association has other sheriff's departments that have policies, and we are looking at them too because, as Brian said, we'd like to develop our own but use them as the sheriff's departments are using here in the state of New York.
That makes sense. Mike?
I'd like to call the question.
Right now the question is target, and nobody has made any moves to do anything different. And do we need to vote on calling the question?
Yes.
Yeah, all right. Is there a second to calling the question? Rich seconded calling the question?
No, I wanted to make an amendment to go to one time.
Everybody had his hand up.
Glenn?
I'll second it.
Okay. All in favor of calling the question, please raise your hand. Opposed? Ones. Too bad Mike can't call the question. Rich, go ahead.
I would move to amend to change the duration from target to one time.
There's a second. Levin, second. Now the discussion on that. Any more talk on target to one time? Somebody say the dollar amount. Is that it?
$44,796.
Mike.
Well, I won't support not having it target because I think you need to go to whatever person you hire for this position and let them know that it's going to be for more than 1 year.
Okay. Carol.
I hope some other people weigh in on this because I'm not sure yet. I thought that I supported this, but as the discussion...
Carol.
Proceeded.
I'm
not sure that I don't agree with Mike. I do want to point out that no matter how we think about it in our heads as 30 versus 44,796, it's for the taxpayer, it's $44,796 that we're adding to the budget. So I don't think that's a useful construct. And I'll also point out that we have three other target requests to consider still on our list.
Let's not talk about those now. Okay.
So I'm just thinking through whether I support this going to I would really like to hear from a few other people on that topic specifically, if there's anybody willing.
Anyone else want to? I support one time. Anyone else support one time? Martha, 10 words or less. No. No one else?
Target?
Anyone else for one time? Dooley, 10 words or less.
I don't want to talk about it.
Okay. The resolution is supporting 44796. One time, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Peter, you're opposed. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Wait a minute. Opposed.
Is this to amend it from full time to part time?
No. It's one time. It's one time. We're voting on the amendment to change it to one time.
Right. Oh, okay.
All right. We'll do it again. I told you you have to go for the fitting. It's an old joke. I'm sorry. It's really old. All in favor of making it one time, raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Opposed to making it one time. Should be 8, right? That making it one time loses. So it's back to the target. All in favor of making this 44796 target, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Opposed. 10. Opposed. Looks like I'm the only one. 1, 2, 3. Okay. Brian.
I was just going to say that, first off, I raised my hand to vote for it.
I was gonna count your vote in place of a tie.
Sorry about
yes,
that.
Two votes.
I was gonna give you one.
I forget who brought it up, but in fairness to the person that is taking the position, I agree with that. And quite frankly, it sends a message to the public that we're committed to this. In my opinion, so I thank you.
All right. Good enough. Anything else for these gentlemen? You're excused, as they say. Glenn, we're going to do Workforce Development Board.
Thank you. It's OTR number 79, and on page section 4, 279. This is to increase the Tompkins County Youth Services Program to provide monitoring and technical assistance.
Is there a second for that? Whoa. Carol, discussion about this request. For this amendment.
Wait, just...
Carol?
Can somebody refresh? Julia, are you here to refresh my memory on how this is connected to youth services?
Well, we have somebody who's been here for a half a day, and they can probably relate that.
Thank you.
Yes, absolutely. This...
Okay. We're both... Either one of you. Yes. Sorry.
Well, since you've both been here, I'll give you both a chance to talk whenever you feel like. Go ahead. You're first.
So this OTR is to increase the time that the Workforce Development Board currently purchases from an existing county youth services staff person. Currently, we fund 10 hours a week of a county youth services staff person. This would increase that to 17 and a half hours a week. And is for county youth services staff to provide technical assistance to youth employment service providers in order to increase youth attachment to the labor force, create career pathways, and it is to work with the Office of Employment and Training, which is one of our contractors for the youth programs, as well as other youth employment providers. I will also just mention quickly that with the legislation, the WIOA legislation,
The age that we are working with went from 21 to 24, and this is an opportunity for us to do a provide more technical assistance to providers to increase youth hours, increase their promotional opportunities. We just need to get youth providers on board and understanding how to create career pathways.
Thank Martha. You. And then my question for Amy, in addition to whatever you're going to say in response to my first question, is if we're paying for this already through the youth services budget, then aren't we just moving it from one line to another rather than needing to add it?
So we're not paying for this. The employee that is currently doing some of this service, so currently we contract with Julia through other outside of county funding and other means to provide this service. That employee is for, what you contract for 10 hours?
10 hours a week.
10 hours a week. The employee is only a 17.5 hour employee currently. So this would allow their hours to extend. So that means that she's a part-time employee. This would give additional hours to continue this program. So what it really looks at is how it takes it out of programming to look at the broader sphere of what does youth employment and career pathways really look like.
Oh, I'm sorry, Martha.
Okay, well, so that before I ask the other question I had, so you said the person's right now at 17 hours. This would add 7.5 to that person's week.
Right.
Okay, so it's new. It's new money, new hours. Got
correct.
It. Okay. I haven't studied the mayor's proposal for his budget, but the little bit I've looked at, I haven't seen anything that relates to that has. It sounds like it's related to the Ithaca drug plan. However, one of the items that I appreciated when he rolled that plan out was that there was a recognition that employment, that entry into career ladders, with the young people from 16, 17, 18, moving into productive employment or school or whatever, was really a gap, and I think it is. So it's getting harder and harder to vote yes for target stuff, but this feels to me like something that an investment we really need to make for that reason.
Anyone else? Ready to vote? It is 14,688 to target. And all in favor, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Opposed, if any. Should be 2. All right, 12-2.
Thank you.
Let me do. Yeah, I want to do library. Susan has been here, and she will have to buy another ticket if
if
she doesn't get one.
Here too.
Yeah. Well, what do you want to do, folks?
Well, they're next on the list.
I want to let the chair do what he has to do.
Yeah, exactly. Let's do the library. Dan Klein, Tompkins County Library, target funding. Go ahead, Dan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move that amendment.
Is there a second to it? Will seconds. Discussion. Dan.
So we had a lot of discussion last time about the importance of libraries in people's lives, so it got me thinking about the importance of libraries in my life. So I rarely give speeches here, so I'm going to give a quick story. 30 years ago, I lived in Hawaii for 1 year. I lived on the North Shore of Hawaii, surf capital of the world, tropical paradise, great nightlife. Monday nights was the only night that the library was open late. And me and my buddy would get in our car and drive the 15 miles to the Waialua Public Library to get that one time in the week when we go to the library. I still have my Waialua library card. I looked hard for it as a prop for this, but I could not find it. And then also last time we were talking about this particular job, which is has to do with technology and helping people understand and have access to the technology that we all use and we all struggle with. And I was thinking about that again, and it suddenly struck me that I learned how to get on the internet at the Tompkins County Public Library. It was the old library, and I walked in there. You know, I had heard of this thing called the internet. I knew I needed to get on it. There was a program, you know, a couple hours a week when you could go and just get, you know, someone would teach you how to do it, and that's how I got on. So I'm not saying I'm here today because of that, but it, you know, that's what libraries are. I know you all support libraries. I know you all like libraries. But I just, you know, I think it's probably the most popular program we run. I can't think of a program that the county runs that is supported by more people than the library. I think the library building, more people enter that every day than probably any other building in the county except maybe Wegmans. I want to remind you that the county the number of people working at the county library is down significantly from 7 or 8 years ago, and that every year they've come back to us and asked for one more position. Every single year we've said no, and I'm just at the point where I don't want to say no anymore. So those are all the reasons why I'm supporting this and hope you will too.
Anyone else want to speak to this? Mike Lane and Peter Stein and Carol Chalk. You want to do it all together? Go ahead, Mike.
For all the reasons that Dan said, I'd love to support this, but I really think that we should hold it at the halftime.
Peter?
Yeah, I seem to have some memory of having made this speech before. But
I think so.
But I'm going to make it again anyway.
Okay.
So I have the great advantage, being a retired professor at Cornell, that I have a number I can call if I have some kind of a problem with my computer, and it gets fixed. And my poor wife, she can't do that at all because she's not a retired professor from Cornell. And it's a tremendous, that's the best thing about being a retired professor, is that you can get somebody to fix your computer over a phone, okay? And I really do think this is an extremely important part of life today. I mean, you people know it because you work here at the county, and there are people at the county that do that for you. But there are more people than that don't have that. And I think this is a huge importance to the people in the area, that they be able to call on somebody who knows what they're doing to help them get around the problems that they've got, whether it be Facebook or their finances or whatever. So I'm going to vote for this.
Over here, it was Martha and then Carol.
Another good case, but I just can't. I mean, we already added a halftime, and from what Joe's budget had, and I just can't. So, sorry.
Carol.
Dan was quite eloquent, and I agree with him. I moved this. If you recall, when I moved the first half of this last week, and we had the whole discussion. I said that the reason that I didn't make it full was I wanted to see where we stood, you know, after all the rest of you had a chance. I got in there real early with all my resolutions or my amendments. See where we stood at this point. Well, at this point, we've added a half a percent on the levy. We're not nearly where I thought we'd be at this point. We have only one other target request to consider. So I would appeal to you. Let's just do the other half.
Who else had their hand up? Anyone else?
No.
I'm not going to support this. I supported the one half the other day, and I think what we should try to do is do what we need to do with the one half and do it for a year and see what we can do in the following year. So, all in favor of the resolution, please raise your hand. One, two, three, four, five, six. Opposed? Should be eight, right? That loses 6-8. Susan, I'm sorry that you had to stay so long tonight.
Well, I just wanted to say thank you for the deliberation and considering it again, and thank you for the halftime. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Kathy, two bill holiday.
I don't know where we are. Dave, you want? We have 12 minutes, 13 minutes. Dave, you want to do soil and water? No, who else is left here?
Kathy and Suzanne Hall are waiting for the next one.
Right back here. Right back here. Where is it, Martha?
It's 20, line 20 there. It's one-time money, additional funding to the Child Development Council to further their mission. I assume that's why Kathy's here for the next one.
And Susan's here.
Sue Dale Hall is here for this. And this would be a contract through DSS. One-time money, $10,000.
Is there a second? Mike Lane seconds. Everyone seconds on this side of the room.
I sent an email around this morning or last night or whenever it was kind of describing the kinds of projects that would be able to be done with this. And let me pull it up. Things like that would either retain providers who have to do extra things to their homes in order to meet the new requirements, new federal requirements, or allow new people to be certified to do child care. And this, I think, is a really very cost-effective way of adding supply to our child care universe here. And I'm happy to read any of these examples if anybody didn't see the email.
I will.
I saw the email. Thank you for sending that. I was particularly moved by the example of the swings overturned for lack of a protective surface. So I thought the
woman who the neighbor had a pond, and so she had to pay for a fence.
Yeah.
Anyone else? All in favor of the? Oh, Rich, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I did not see the email, so I'm having trouble voting for it. Is this something we could push off till Monday? I'm sorry.
She's been waiting.
I know.
It's not anything to target. Thank you, Ron. They have a small fund right now, and the maximum that they can provide is $300, $25 to $300 for individual projects. And we're talking about people who need an extra $25 to do some of these things.
And a desperate need for more daycare, and this just makes that happen.
Rich, to answer your question, we could, but I think we should vote for it.
Okay.
All in favor of this at one time, $10,000, please raise your hand. Opposed, if any? Opposed, Peter? Okay, 13 to 1.
Thank you.
The other...
And Kathy's waiting for the next one.
Yeah.
Okay. This is three-year funding, so multi-year funding, to go into the contingent funds. It's $50,000 each year for 3 years. So, again, it comes out of reserves, not target. And the first bunch of money would be allocated to contingent fund pending the Human Services Coalition coming back to us with a plan for how to spend this money. And this is for transitional housing. Catholic Charities has done an elegant job of providing a house for four women, and I think was for like $10,000 put into it. So we need a comprehensive plan. Who's the target audience? How could it be done, et cetera? So we can't just like hand it over yet, but the coalition runs the continuum of care with all the providers sitting together, and they would work together to figure out the best plan for this kind of money.
You are making that motion?
Yes.
Is there a second? Anna seconds. Mike and then Carol.
But it's not just for those four women, obviously. It's for...
No, it's taking that model. Yeah, it's taking that model. It's like, we don't have to wait 3 years for a new tax credit project for Tompkins Community Action to do 25 beds. We might be able to get a couple more four-bedroom houses, say. So much more quickly.
So like even the place of a new field might be involved. It would be like...
Right.
Okay, I got it.
Right. And the continuum of care, they're the right experts to sit and figure out the best solutions.
Over this side of the room, Carol, then Dooley.
So I really support this, but if Kathy's willing to come back, it feels like this is a new thing, and I would rather have us do this when we're fresh. since we have to come back anyway for John.
We wouldn't ever allocate. It's like we did with the reentry. We wouldn't allocate
I will
until
vote
we have a
for
plan.
This. I'm just worried that we won't, because people's attention spans are just shot right now, that we won't end up with the votes. So I support this.
And I had somebody over here. Dooley, and then back to you, Rich. Go ahead, Dooley.
Is this something that the need for which will go away after 3 years?
No, I don't think so, but however.
That's what I object to this. We're playing games, Mark.
However, Tompkins Community Action Tompkins Community Action is working on a bigger project, and it is probably going to be at least 3 years before that gets ready to go. In the meantime, we have desperate people out here. So it's also, maybe Kathy can talk about this, because it's also a way of identifying sustainable funding for some of these places.
Martha, my question was going to be, how does this relate to TC Action and everybody else in town? You know, there seems to be a lot of people. Go ahead, Kathy.
Okay, thank you. One of the things that's very difficult to get now is money for transitional housing. A lot of the money has to be for permanent supportive housing. So losing that funding stream for transitional housing, which, as everybody knows, when you transition from someplace, it's the most critical time if you are trying to get yourself back on your feet, especially in a community like this where rents are so high. Frequently people have no other option but to go back to the same kind of housing or situation that, frankly, help exacerbate the situation in the first place. To have some extra funding in a town where the stipends you'll get for the government just aren't enough to pay for any kind of housing that you would live in for very long. This could help a lot of people. I can't tell exactly how many people, because whether it's used to pay for the rent or subsidize other things to help people get in the kind of housing and get the kind of support services they need. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, I have Mike and then I have Anna.
I'll be quick.
Oh, I'm sorry. Rich, Mike, and Anna.
Sorry.
I apologize you've been waiting so long, but I don't feel I understand this. And if we're going to force it to vote tonight, I'm going to vote against. I just don't feel ready to spend the money. I think we should wait till Monday to consider this.
Mike?
I can come back on Monday.
Martha, I agree with that. And I think we're going to be here Monday for sure. Okay? Mike, you want to?
I'll probably vote for that, but I think if you can get more support on Monday, you probably should wait. But I mean, that's just me. I mean, my question, no, I mean, I would like this to pass unanimously. I think it probably will. So. I don't know.
Anna.
Mike, wait.
Oh, sorry.
My question is, and this is going to, there's really no good way to phrase this. When we get people in that transitional housing, is it always a consideration like we have to keep them in Tompkins County? Or is it sometimes better to say, well, where are you from? Like, where's your family? Oh, okay. Is there a reason we can't, that you're not there? You know, I just always think that sometimes we throw people out and they don't have the support, and that's kind of why they fail, basically. Whereas,
yeah,
I don't know if we
most of the people
that.
Are people who do or who come from Tompkins County and just can't. It's not a good healthy situation for them where they were living before, and they're transitioning to permanent housing because permanent housing is so hard to find.
Right.
It gives them time to stabilize and people to find the kind of housing we're looking for. It's tough to find it here.
Gotcha. Thanks.
Who else? Are you going to withdraw?
No, yeah, I'll withdraw.
Well, I was going to make that. Or I think I was next.
Wait, I mean, you know, it is not yet 8:30.
Anna. Easy, Anna.
Yeah, I'm.
Easy.
I'm fine.
Okay.
I just want to add, we've had this discussion off and on, and one of the things that I was impressed about this was the idea that people end up in a very difficult situation because they are in an environment that that leads them down a road that, like, for example, if they have a drug habit and they end up working their way out of it, and the only housing that is available for them to transition back is surrounded in an environment that does not support their attempt to put their lives back together again. The idea for this that I appreciate is creating some flexibility and diversity in the housing options so that we can support people in the most effective way possible for them to succeed. And I think that I appreciate that for this exact reason. So thank you.
That's really a very nice idea.
Martha, do you want to withdraw?
I'll withdraw.
Okay,
if I can ask one of the people from Catholic Charities maybe to come on Monday to describe what they did with very little money, and as the model that kind of made me think of that we could do this.
Sure, and if there's anything else or data that you would like me to bring or get to you before then that would help you with the vote, just let me know, let Martha know she can get.
We're done with that. It's withdrawn. There are two items left. Dave McKenna, Soil and Water, Martha Robertson, Planning, Ed left, so I'm guessing that's withdrawn. Dave, I think we'll do this Monday. If there's any other amendments that people have in mind, please get them to Kevin so that we can be here Monday. And let me just say what the process would be on Monday. We get through with the three things and any other amendments, we would ask for a vote on the tentative budget. We would be at the end of the process at that time, and then that would move on to the ledge on Tuesday. And then we would set a public – well, we've already set the public hearing. The budget would go to the public hearing, blah, blah, blah. Anytime from now until November 18th is the date? No. We're all voting on November 28th. You do know that, right? November 28th is Election Day.
I
heard it on TV last night.
October.
Said by down J. Trump billionaire. Okay, on November 18th, 15th, we vote on the final budget, and we can make amendments up to the very end of the process. Martha.
Yeah, Ed apologized. He had to leave. If I can, the strategy to implement just for people to think about the housing strategy. Now, if I can ask Kevin, I'm looking for what's the dollar number we've added to the levy since Joe handed us the budget?
$240,000.
We've added $240,000. I'm gonna spend the weekend looking for places to cut Target.
All right. Well, that's a good job. Is there any festivals around that we can go to? We're done here. Thank you very much.